Thank you, Mr. Chair, for giving me the floor. I would like to respond to some of the interventions that have been made by delegates and participants. I think we had already a discussion this morning about the difference between access and rights. What I would like to highlight in this context is the fact that land and other natural resources have an inalienable character for peasants and other people in rural areas, which means that, these resources are the basis for their specific identity. For example, when a woman peasant loses her land, she basically loses her identity as a peasant woman. And when a fisher community loses its fishing grounds, then its members lose their identity as fishers. In this sense, land and natural resources are indispensable for the human dignity of peasants, small-scale fishers, pastoralists, and indigenous peoples, because their territories are essential for conducting a self-determined life in dignity and in community with others. And also when they don't have access to and control over these resources, they are become vulnerable to oppression, discrimination, and exploitation. It has been underlined by several of the peasant representatives in the room today how that many violations of the human rights of peasants and other people working in rural areas are linked to land and natural resources. And there have been examples made on how also the current developments are rather increasing conflicts around these essential resources. And just to add on that, it's also important to take into account that land is becoming increasingly an object of financial speculation, and that also technologies and digitalization also supports or favors these developments and leads to more speculative investments. Article 17, as it stands in the current draft, takes into account developments in recent years regarding the recognition of the human rights dimension of land and other natural resources, and in particular for rural people. So I will not name them all, but you can. Several have been mentioned already today. So it's the guidelines for the progressive realization of the right to food, the guidelines on the responsible governance of tenure of land, fisheries, and forests, the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And there is also an increasing body of jurisprudence by the competent human rights bodies at UN and regional levels, including several general comments and an increasing number of concluding observations of the UN treaty body. So in that sense, framing this paragraph or the content of this paragraph around access does not at all take into account the developments that have been made, because in several of these instruments that I just mentioned, there is a recognition that the access is closely linked to the use and the management of natural resources. And there's also no doubt that land is also about power and about control and about how the access and the use are managed and what are the modalities of that access. I think that this article as it stands is also providing a guidance to states on how to manage increasing conflicts in the dynamic that I mentioned before and that has been mentioned by other speakers before me, specifically in the context of increasing speculation and extraction of wealth. Specifically, because there was a specific comment on the issue of agrarian reform, I would just like to remind delegates that agrarian reform is referred to in the International Covenant on Social, Economic, and Cultural Rights, specifically in Article 11, in paragraph 11.2.a. And it's also, there's a whole chapter in the guidelines on the responsible governance of tenure on land, fisheries, and forests. That's chapter 15. And in this context, also prioritizing specific groups in this context, I think, is part of the human rights, basic human rights principles. I would finally just like to stress that we understand that this is also part of the mandate of the Human Rights Council to contribute to the development of international law in the context of the evolving character of international law. And there are several examples of rights which were recognized in non-binding instruments, and in some cases these have then been recognized in binding instruments as well. So one example is, for example, the human right to water and sanitation. And I would also like to recall ourselves that as we are celebrating the 70 years of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, this historic document enshrined for the first time the fundamental rights of all human beings, and this declaration, just as this declaration paved the way for the development of the international human rights law that we know today. Finally, closing, I would like to support the proposal made by South Africa to not limit the mentioning only the right to achieve an adequate standard of living in Article 17.1, because as a matter of fact, land is linked or is a necessary condition for the realization of a whole bundle of human rights, and so the proposal to refer to the realization of human rights as such would improve the article. For the rest, we would highly appreciate if the article could be adopted as it stands. Thank you very much.